Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy, your host. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember that you can find us on Facebook or you can send us an email at heartstockradio@gmail.com. This evening, our guest is Ben Thornley, and he is an impact investment expert. Just a moment, Ben will be back and tell you all about what he's up to. This is Heartstock. Thanks for listening.
But on the other side, it didn't say nothing.
This time was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to New York Island. From the redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. This land was made for you and me.
Good evening. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Carol Murphy, your host, and this is Heartstock Radio. In the studio is Clark Grant, and this evening our guest is Ben Thornley. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Carol. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for being on our show. Please tell our guests, Ben, what is impact investing? And Ben is also the founder of Tideline. Maybe you can just give them a little introduction as to what it is that you do.
Absolutely. I'm happy to. And I'll start off speaking a little slowly so that your listeners can adjust to my strange accent. I'm from down under. And then I'll pick up the pace as we go on here. But I'm one of the founders and managing partners, as you said, at Tideline, which is a small consulting firm that specializes in impact investing. So we have 16 people, primarily in New York and San Francisco, although I live myself in Portland, Oregon, where I moved with my family about 6 months ago. And I have to say, actually, it reminds me very much of my motherland, New Zealand, where I was born. So Tideline is like, you know, the Deloitte of impact investing, if you will. We don't manage money. We don't make investment recommendations. But we help those that are managing money and those that are investing for impact to do more of it and do a better job of it. So we've got a mix of large commercial and social sector clients, groups your listeners may have heard of, like the Gates Foundation or the Ford Foundation, like the USAID Agency or the United Nations, but also some major Wall Street players and investors like a KKR or Franklin Templeton. So we've been advising clients in impact investing for about 5 years, which, for those who are less familiar with the term, is essentially a kind of logical next step in the evolution of responsible investment. So as you may know, something called screening, where you're excluding stocks and bonds that you may have an objection to, for example, outdoor entertainment, or in, you know, nuclear weapons manufacturer or tobacco or whatever it happens to be, has been something that's been quite popular for a long time. And more recently, there's been a shift to look at companies that are doing a better job on the social and environmental management of their businesses. And then even more recently, in about the last 10 years, there's been another shift toward companies that can demonstrate proactively that they're creating positive social or environmental impacts. And that's what we call impact investing. So it's a shift from avoiding the things you don't like to actually doing more of the things that you do like.
So just to clarify slightly here, Ben, if, for example, the Gates Foundation comes to your firm, do they actually provide you a list of things that they do and do not want to invest their money in? Or is that something that you just already have on deck?
Yeah, with the Gates Foundation, it'll be we've done some interesting work with the foundation over a number of years, where we'll take something that the Gates Foundation feels very strongly about, in this case, developing drugs and vaccines for the developing world and making them available to more people. And essentially, we'll look at the way they've traditionally done that, which has been through providing grants, many billion dollars of grants, in fact. And we'll look at that and say, might there be an opportunity at the margins, for the most part, to take what's typically done through, through donations, through grants, and actually turn it into a sustainable commercial opportunity? So might there be a subset of those, vaccine manufacturers or those drug distributors or those health clinics, those actors in the supply chain that might be able to actually create a business that, as a result of actually generating revenue, could become more sustainable over the long term? So it's taking something that has been historically entirely philanthropic or funded by government and trying to understand whether at the margins we can create some sort of investment strategy that can actually generate a return. Mm-hmm. Because I think we found that if we can do that, then we can provide, potentially more drugs and vaccines at a higher quality and over time continue to sort of multiply, the growth of those kinds of strategies and use the very precious money that Gates does have, the grant money, for other purposes.
Mm-hmm. That seems very smart. How about like CalPERS? They have all this money from, California employees, state of California employees. They come to you and want you to do what?
Yeah, so with CalPERS, it may be a case that one of the challenges in impact investing is agreeing on what impact actually means. Your impact may not be my impact, or things you care about may be things that I care about less. And so when you've got a large institution like CalPERS, the chances that any one of the millions of stakeholders that have an interest in CalPERS agrees with what anyone else thinks is impact is difficult to ascertain. So with large institutions, you usually find them rallying around the largest kind of mega trends that we all agree are important. So to be more specific, climate change, for example, or inequality and the importance of local economic development. So in the case of CalPERS, what they probably can come to agreement on is that they need to do something about, environmental sustainability, and they need to do something about supporting the growth and development of California, where the vibrancy of the business climate in California actually directly affects the sustainability of that fund. And so what they may do is say, well, let's direct a small portion of our fund to create economic growth in California. And so, they may create an investment strategy that does that. And CalPERS did do that for many years. And then what they'll want to do is make sure that they're actually achieving what they set out to achieve. So they might come to Tideline or any other consulting firm and ask us to help make sure that they're having the social benefits they want to have, they're having the economic developments they want to have, it's creating the jobs they want to create outside of just the typical places like, Northern California or the Los Angeles area that are already quite vibrant. So a lot of what we're talking about here is making sure that economic growth that certain places have enjoyed is spread more widely.
Mm. We always like to hear the stories of our guests. How did you end up on this path, Ben?
Well, I was born in New Zealand and grew up in Australia, where my parents kind of hammered home the importance of public service. So both my parents were teachers. And then more recently, my mother actually became a minister in the Methodist Church, and She's been a very strong influence on my life and has been extremely driven in her own personal calling as a minister. So I started my career as an investment reporter. And when I traveled to New York about 20 years ago on an assignment, I took one look at the city and knew I needed to live in this amazing country where I immigrated 2 years later. So I've been in the US for the better part of 20 years and became a US citizen about 10 years ago. So when I graduated, you know, we moved to California where my wife was from. And when I graduated, I wanted to find a career that combined some of my interests in business and finance from my time as a journalist and public policy, which I'd studied, which led me to impact investing and a small nonprofit firm in San Francisco where I led their research and consulting business. So it was a case of being in the right, you know, right place at the right time. You know, impact investing was just getting started. At that time, there was funding available from the likes of, you know, the Rockefeller Foundation and others to support the type of research I was doing. So I wrote many case studies. I spoke to many investors about this. We held many meetings and conferences. I ended up writing a book about impact investing. So at that time, we were kind of laying the groundwork for the market's development. And, you know, since then, you know, the market has grown very quickly. My parents, I hope my parents think they did a good job. I'm certainly grateful for it. And as a result, I've always believed that even the trillions of dollars that are chasing investment opportunities around the world can be harnessed, you know, for positive social and environmental impact. You know, as long as that's done in a very disciplined way and with a lot of integrity. And frankly, we need that to happen. You know, there's too few government dollars and there's too few, you know, philanthropic dollars to, you know, make a real impact on the kinds of challenges we're confronting as a society. So we really do need investors to join with government and with foundations and others to help, you know, help make the world a better place.
So is your contention that now is the time? It's really coming to the forefront and impact in investing has grown because of the challenges, or is it driven by desires of the investors themselves to divest from things that they aren't aligned with?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things that are driving the growth of the market, and the market is growing very quickly, by the way. I think if you look at data from the last 5 years, I mean, it's almost, you know, doubled in size in the last couple of years and has grown from a very small base. It's still a very small market comparatively compared to, you know, more traditional investment markets, but it is growing quickly. And I think that's a result of more of an understanding of the things that connect us all. I think we see day to day the effects of things like climate change and inequality. I think the Me Too movement has really created a lot of awareness of gender-related issues. So these large trends are really driving interest for all of us in how we, you know, how we can make a difference. And so you see that reflected, for example, in the kind of work that young people want to do in their lives, where I think, you know, looking back a number of generations, the understanding was that you would work hard and then when you retired or whatever, you would give away some of what you'd earned to charity. I think nowadays, you know, young people want to actually make a positive difference in their everyday lives. So I think young people are driving the trend. I think that increased globalization is driving the trend. I think as consumers, I think there's more consciousness about being responsible, you know, responsible consumers. And I think that another large barrier that has been overcome is this sense that if you invest in this way, you will inevitably make less money. So there has been a preconception that by focusing on both financial return and on impact, you'll be distracted. And essentially by serving two masters, you'll succeed in neither. But in fact, recent research has shown that by having an impact focus, in fact, in some cases that can lead to financial outperformance. So I think there's a few things that are driving, you know, fairly rapid growth in the market.
I'm going to take a quick break. We're about halfway through, and in just a moment, Ben will be back to share more of his story. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy, your host. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock Radio, and our guest today is Ben Thornley. Hi again, Ben.
Hi, Carol.
So this topic is just fascinating to me. You mentioned that impact investing can actually lead to an outperformance compared to what, like just traditional mutual funds, and why is that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it really cuts to the pointy end, if you will, the tip of the spear in terms of where the conversation is headed in this market. So to be clear, not every impact investment can sustain a competitive rate of return. And the surveys indicate that about two-thirds of investors that are investing to try and create some positive social or environmental outcome are seeking a traditional commercial competitive rate of return, but we should also acknowledge that fully one-third investing knowing that what they're investing in will make it very difficult for them to achieve a competitive rate of return. So there are many different types of investors, and they each have different objectives that balance what they want to achieve financially and what they want to achieve socially or environmentally. But just to focus in on that two-thirds that are seeking a competitive rate of return, we ourselves at Tideline have done some research with some leading fund managers that are active in this space. And what we've discovered is that in some cases, having an impact objective actually helps them do a better job as an investor, period. And the reason for that is that, firstly, they sometimes have access to unique kind of investment opportunities that others may not have access to. I think that sectors like health, the health sector or the education sector, or investing in renewable energy, or investing in sustainable agriculture, investing in local economic development are not things that most investors typically do. And yet, if you scratch the surface, it is possible to find pockets of opportunity. And so, impact investors can sometimes come in where others have not and use that unique insight that they have to uncover, great investment opportunities. The second way they do that is essentially by helping those companies they invest in design more effective products. As I was talking about earlier, I think increasingly consumers are looking for very authentic, responsible brands. And so impact investors can help them create those brands. Talent is a perennial challenge for companies, attracting great talent. And as I was saying, I think companies that have an impact or can communicate their role in their community can attract better people, which is really important. And also, I think where consumers care about, their social or environmental footprint, I think that, again, impact investors can help develop companies that speak to consumers that have an interest in social environmental impact. And then finally, when you're thinking about impact, you're also thinking about additional risks. Now, this is not a topic that's uncommon to many investors. I think increasingly investors are aware of the kinds of risks that are created by social and environmental issues, like, you know, whether it's climate, whether it's, you know, worker safety, or pollution, or the cost of, you know, the cost of energy, whatever it might happen to be. And I think when an investor backs a company and has an impact perspective, yeah, they tend to be very rigorous at looking at the way that company is operating, the way that company is either active or not in their community, the way they engage with other stakeholders, the way they manage their risks. And so we found that by accessing better deals potentially, by being able to create more value, and by strengthening outcomes and, you know, being particularly careful about social environmental risks, impact investors can actually outperform financially, which is exciting.
So how about those other investors who are primarily focused on that rate of return? What kind of companies are they investing in, and how much return are they giving up? What are we talking about in terms of percentages or real returns?
Yeah, we don't have the data yet to talk about that. I mean, I think that as with any investment, I think there are managers, fund managers and mutual funds that outperform, and there are those that underperform. So for sure, you know, the quality of an investment team, their experience, their understanding of the sectors in which they invest will always be critical in terms of determining, you know, the likelihood of an investment performing the way you would hope. So there's not the data to answer that question, but I think what we're seeing in the institutional market is that over time, an investor's ability to understand social and environmental risk has become almost a license to operate. So if you're an investment company and you're going to CalPERS or whoever, any other investor, and you're wanting them to invest in your product, you know, some of the first questions they'll ask will be, you know, how do you understand these, you know, these new types of risks that we haven't been as familiar with previously? And do you have the ability and the capability to manage those risks and understand those risks? And I think in the same way, that has now become almost a ubiquitous practice in traditional investing. We suspect that in the future, it may be the case that if you're not thinking about the other impacts you're having besides financial impact, if you're not thinking about the kind of effects that a company is having in your community, both positive and negative, then we're really missing an opportunity to just understand better what that company is doing and how it's performing.
Well, yeah, and I'm just thinking about, you know, dollars and cents versus other returns to community. And, you know, there's certainly seems to be a much longer window of time that one has to be willing to accept. Do you think that's the case? You know, looking at this other one third who may be getting a lower return. I mean, they're still getting a return, not just in dollars and cents, but in other ways too.
Exactly. It's a great question. And I think the research does show that when we're talking about the advantages from having a better understanding of social or environmental risks, often those advantages really come through in the longer term. It's very similar to the transition I described earlier with, for example, the Gates Foundation. So when you provide a program with a grant, you know, you see the immediate effects. You know, you provide them the money, they implement the service, and that's the end of it. So there's kind of an immediate benefit that's apparent to all. When you actually say, you know, we're not going to provide you with a grant, we're actually going to try and help you become a sustainable business, that is a longer term proposition. So really what you're doing is saying in 5 to 10 years time, we hope that you've succeeded in creating, you know, a sustainable revenue generating business model. And so this shift in thinking, I think you've really nailed it on, you know, hit the nail on the head, Carol. I think the shift in thinking is shifting from a shorter term focus to a longer term focus. And so that's a big part of what this story involves.
Mm-hmm. Recently, there's been in the news rise of the REST Fund. Can you share with our listeners just what that is? And it seems to me like it's evidence that we're going to see more and more impact investing and people coming to the forefront to push this more into our consciousness as investors.
Yeah, it's a great initiative from Steve Case, the founder of AOL, who traveled, you know, around the country for a number of years, essentially meeting entrepreneurs that were not in the usual places, which in the case of, you know, the kind of venture capital investment that Steve is well known from is literally almost entirely focused on just a few places in the United States. So Steve literally got in a bus and drove around the country and met folks in places, you know, like Butte, and realized that they were just being overlooked. You know, there just wasn't a good understanding of the opportunities that were in, you know, other parts of the country. And so he ended up creating a fund and invited particularly, you know, other prominent business executives he knew well, like Jeff Bezos from Amazon or Eric Schmidt from Google, Howard Schultz from Starbucks, and invited them to join him in investing $150 million in these entrepreneurs. And interestingly, I think the fact that he succeeded in doing that, but at the same time that it was such a new initiative, I think indicates just how much work we have to do to really create investable opportunities, to create, you know, funds and other ways that all of us can support those kind of businesses. So I think for many years, there's, you know, we haven't paid enough attention to the excellent entrepreneurial work that's happening outside of the places we're more accustomed to investing in. And so I think it's incumbent upon all of us to, you know, pull back the curtains and direct capital to where it hasn't typically gone.
Mm-hmm. So this time has gone by so fast once again. I've got just about a minute left, and maybe you can tell our listeners how they might find you.
Absolutely. I think, there's a website, www.tideline.com, and we welcome visitors to the website to learn more about what we're doing. And I'm not particularly active on Twitter, but I do have a Twitter account. And my Twitter handle is Impact Insight. So Impact Insight, you'll find me on Twitter, and I look forward to being in touch with you all.
Thanks so much, Ben. This is Ben Thornley, and I'm Carol Murphy. Thanks for listening to Heartstock. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5 Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at butteamericaradio.org.